from the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Presented by 2020lifestyles.com. This is The Blitz. The first look at the top stories in Seattle sports.
I don't make them like us. We're not like everybody else.
The rundown on everything Seattle sports on your way to work.
Swing and a fly ball. Deep right center field. He did it again.
And the stories everyone is talking about.
We got to have that pass. We got to do it for each other.
This is The Blitz at 6.
Good morning, friends. Welcome to The Blitz at 6. Lydia Cruz alongside with you Thursday, February 27th. How's everyone doing this morning? We've almost made it to Friday. We've got spring training baseball on our screens or on our radios. Not much to complain about right now. The NFL Combine also underway and workouts beginning today. We'll hear from Pete Carroll in this hour. He sat down with John Clayton yesterday to chat about their interests in this year's draft and also some young people, maybe from last year's draft class, that he's hoping takes that next step forward this year. Also, some youth on display for the Ens this week. They got the win yesterday. And thanks to a couple of their young stars helping out both at the plate and on the mound, also some veterans in the mix as well. All ahead in this hour. Right now, let's get to your headlines. It was our opportunity to hear from both John Schneider and Pete Carroll this week, both of them taking the podium, but also both of them taking time to sit down with the professor, with John Clayton. Pete Carroll talking to John yesterday saying, we're trying to add to this team because they know that they're close to making that Super Bowl run.
You know, the big questions everybody's asked about JD and asked about Jay Reid and what's going to happen there and the acquisition of Greg Olsen is something that's special for us. And so there's a lot happening. I mean, I don't know if I can zero in on what's going to take place there. But what we're trying to do is we're trying to add to this team. We know we were really close last year with a chance to be a championship club. And it's exciting to know that we're that close with a couple spots. And we have some room that we can work with in the cap. Some. Not a lot, but some. That'll go fast. But all of that, you know, leads us to opportunity now. So the draft is a big-time opportunity to help our club.
Speaking of that draft, Pete Carroll, obviously the pass rush, an area of interest, was an area of interest heading into last year. And Pete Carroll mentioning their big board up now, their draft board, there's at least a half dozen pass rushers they're interested in.
There is a pretty good group of guys, and it's going to be interesting to see, you know, how that all comes down. There's a half dozen guys that have been effective, maybe more than that, half a dozen that we're looking at for sure, that have been effective and put up some numbers and could add to a club and could help us. And so we just have to see how it sorts out.
Lydia, read that clip wrong, and that's actually talking about free agents, but you know, it's early in the morning, so Pete's saying there's about a half dozen they're interested in perhaps free agency. Pete Carroll, though, speaking about the pass rush more generally and saying it's a focal point for everything that they're doing, including the draft.
Yeah, that's definitely the focal point for us, and it has to be. And that's why the work being done now, early, is crucial. And John's on it, and he'll take us as far as he can. And then, you know, we're very open to what the other opportunities that are out there, and we're on everything. So, I mean, he's not sleeping. Between John and Matt Thomas, those guys are up all night long working to just stay ahead of the agents and make sure that they can make all the communications that are necessary. It's a really, really grueling, busy time for those guys. They are just busting ass to get started here just to get this the combine underway. You know, that's all the pre-combine stuff that they're doing and their visits here.
Also hoping that a couple players on the team, we see flashes from them as well in their development, LJ Collier being one of them. Pete mentioning Rasheem Green, that's a player that you saw take that leap, and LJ, in his mind, is capable of exactly the same thing.
Well, first, let's go back to Rasheem. Rasheem had a fantastic season in the second year and really helped us in a number of ways, made a lot of big plays, really showed tremendous growth, which really leads us to talking about LJ. LJ got off to a tough start with a nasty ankle injury that he had. Took him a while to get going. He was behind throughout most of camp, and the hard part of camp, when he could have shown, you know, his development and given everybody the confidence, himself and us, and all that he was ready. If he comes roaring back like Rasheem did, then we get another really good ball player to add to the mix. Both those guys are playing that five technique and the three technique spot. They could both start at the same time at their spots. And it's important for us to see that development. So that's what we're after. But that's just, you know, one spot of it. But that's we're hoping LJ can really make a move.
Also, Pete, with some thoughts on their decision to use so much base defense last year. Pete saying, well, it was good when it comes down to the numbers. And also that it's based a lot about on their personnel.
Well, the numbers worked out pretty well, John. The numbers worked out well versus the three wide receiver stuff. They're the best we've had in a number of years. What it did, it forced our opponents out of and away from that some. And we saw more of other stuff. We didn't play as well against the other stuff. And so we're disappointed that we weren't able to hold up as well as we would like to in our base defense versus other base looks. We did pick up an advantage on the other aspect of it, but we need to. So it's a big area of us for us to develop.
Will there be more nickel this year? Well, that depends on personnel, Pete says.
Could be. Yeah, that depends on the people, you know. Remember that Michael Kendricks was a really extraordinary player, and if Michael comes back and he's raring to go and he puts himself back in that spot, then he gives us that flexibility. We will certainly use that some because it was effective for us, but it's going to depend on the guys. And Ugo Amadi played well at the nickel spot last year, did a good job late in the year. We need to see him through camp in all aspects of it. He did not have to play a lot of early down stuff in nickel because we play base, so that's yet to be determined as we go. There's a couple other guys we have in mind at this point from our roster that will compete there too to give us different style players there, because that position allows you can use a guy that can be effective in a run, he can be a zone player or a man player, or he can be a blitzer. You know, there's a lot of things that happen on that crucial spot there, and so we're going to take a shot with a couple other guys. We'll let you see that as it unveils later.
More from the Combine throughout the week here on 710 ESPN Seattle. But also, spring training going on. We'll have split squad action later today. Yesterday, though, the M's improving to 2-2 in Cactus League play with a 5-3 win over the Reds. Justin Dunn made his 2020 spring training debut, allowing one run in two frames. Scott Servais on his performance.
Really impressed with Justin Dunn today. I thought he threw the ball really well. Just his whole demeanor, attacking with his fastball early in the game, was great to see. He feels good about where he's at right now.
And that's good news. Justin Dunn speaking to that afterwards as well. Also, how about Tim Lopes? He continued his hot start to spring. Lopes doubled twice yesterday, is 5-for-5 with 4 doubles in 2 games this spring. And Scott Servais saying he might be leading the league in that.
Offensively, Tim Lopes is, I think, leading the world in doubles right now. So he's continues to stay hot. Did some nice things on the bases today, too. Aggressive guys that typically don't. Wisdom took off, got a great jump. So staying aggressive, made the plays defensively. Again, pitching and defense, the key today. But fun game. I like to see all these young guys we've got. We've got really talented arms. Once they keep it in the strike zone, chance for good things to happen. So good ball game again today.
The Reds, though, played in the first run of the game. Christian Colon's RBI double in the second inning. The Mariners evening things up shortly after Carlos Gomez lining a 2-out double and came around to score on Daniel Vogelbach's single.
Runner at second base, 2 outs. The pitch to Vogie swung on, hit hard up the middle, past the diving second base from Moustakas into center field. Around third base, scoring easily is Gonzalez, and Vogie has driven in a run. This game is tied at 1 apiece.
Since he took back the lead 2-1 in the fifth on a run-scoring single from Nick Castellanos. The Mariners answering back, though, in the sixth. Gonzalez leading off with a walk. Pinch runner Jose Siri later scoring on Lopes double to right field.
The 0-1 swung on and lasered to right center field. Jankowski ranging over. He's not going to get there. This is rolling all the way to the wall. Rounding third base is Gonzalez. He's going to score easily. Coasting into second is Lopes. A ringing double to drive home a run, and this game is tied at 2 apiece.
New Mariner Patrick Wisdom bringing Lopes home on a single of his own.
Here's the pitch to Wisdom. Swung on off the end of the bat, dumps it into right field, a base hit. With the infield playing in, Wisdom goes the other way, drives home the go-ahead run, and the Mariners now lead 3-2.
Dylan Moore also getting in on the action, playing the Mariners' third run of that inning on an RBI single, giving the M's a 4-2 lead.
Here's the pitch, a chopper up the middle, and that's going to hop into center field for a base hit. Rounding third base and scoring easily is Wisdom as the Mariners get another run on the board. That took a kangaroo hop into center field. It hopped over the shortstop's head. It really had no shot as he was ranging over to try and make the play, and the Mariners get their third run of the frame.
A moment of concern, and Dylan Moore had to come out of that game. And Scott Servais said afterwards that he just hit his head, that he'll be okay and ready to go. It wasn't anything too serious. But the Mariners leading 4-2 at that point, and Siri extending that lead 5-2 in the seventh on his first home run of the spring.
Here's the pitch. Swung on and clubbed to left center field. This is drilled. Fairchild back looking up. This one is gone. Onto the grass. in left center field. That was hammered, a solo blast, Jose Suri. And the Mariners have extended the lead. It's now 5-2 M's.
The Mariners gave up an unearned run in the bottom of the eighth, but held on for the 5-3 victory. And really impressive for the first outing of spring for Justin Dunn, allowing one run on two hits and one walk while striking out two in two innings of work, especially in that first inning when he got Joey Votto, among others. And Dunn, or Scott Zer was talking about Dunn in the first inning, is what they're looking for.
That's what we're looking for. I think that's what they saw most of the year last year in Arkansas. And some guys, it takes them a little bit longer to get the comfort level. It's great that he got some experience at the big league level last year, took that into the offseason, made a few adjustments, and showed up today.
Up next on the Blitz, Danny O'Neill sat down with Justin Dunn as one of the many people they've sat down with so far at spring training, as they are live there from Peoria broadcasting all this week. We'll ask Danny what he took away from sitting down with Justin. Also, Marco yesterday was phenomenal, and the skipper, Scott Service, sitting down with him. What has been his biggest takeaways from those conversations? It's next on the Blitz right here on 710 ESPN Seattle.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio, this is the Blitz.
Welcome back to the Blitz at 6. Lydia Cruz alongside with you Thursday, February 27th. Danny and Gallant live from spring training all this week in Peoria, sitting down with some pretty big names already this week. Both the general manager and the skipper sitting down with those guys. Danny, what's been your biggest takeaway from chatting with both the front office, the skip, and the players?
That this is a team that has a pretty clear sense of who it is. Last year, there was not a division, but there was a split. You had a group of veterans who were here who knew they weren't going to be here long term. Edwin Encarnacion, Jay Bruce, the number of guys that you had that were going to be in the lineup and everyday players who knew, like, long term, I probably really don't fit here in their plans. This is a team that's trying to get younger, and we're not entirely space holders, but we're here until they can move us on to somebody else. And I think that created, well, they started off so fast that you wondered, okay, maybe they're really good, but it created this kind of disconnect where the team you were watching, you knew wasn't going to be the team they're going to be 2 or 3 years from now. And right now, if you think about it, Marco Gonzalez is one of the veterans, and Kyle Seager is a guy that's an older player. And that's really about it when it comes to guys that you would identify as, okay, he's kind of just biding time here. They've got a number of young, exciting players. Tim Lopes is off to a fantastic start.
Let's go. But 5 for 5.
He's 5 for 5. He's got 3 doubles. Is that right? Or is it four doubles?
Yeah.
He hit a couple yesterday. So you're getting a chance to see all of these guys, and it's kind of the opportunity to let your imagination run wild. Nobody's under the impression that this is going to be a team that makes the playoffs. They're too young. But I think everybody's excited because we're going to see the players that they've restocked their farm system with, which, by the way, is now a top five farm system, where it was just 2 years ago that they were evaluated as the worst farm system in baseball.
I think ESPN did an article recently where they went through the top prospects on every squad. And when you get to the AL West, it's just interesting to see five players on that list, five in the top 100. The Astros have one.
Mm-hmm.
That's because they've traded away and leveraged a lot of their players to get Garrett Cole, to get Justin Verlander and Zach Greinke in the past couple of years, and now also losing some draft picks in association with this whole sign-stealing scandal. But it's just a very different position to see now five compared to some of the other teams who have been so highly touted.
Yes, and that was the goal of this entire process of taking a step back. And I think if you ask Jerry DePoto, honestly, did he expect to be able to amass this number of prospects? I don't think he would have. I think, honestly, when they started to make the change a little more than a year ago, when they started that process, I don't think he felt it would turn over as quickly as it did. I think, honestly, he's surprised that they were able to make that deal with the Mets,
yeah,
which right now looks like it has the possibility. And everybody loves Edwin Diaz, and Edwin Diaz had a tough year last year. But he was obviously an incredibly quality asset. But Jared Kelnick looks like he's got the kind of ability that he could be a franchise-changing player, not to mention Justin Dunn, who went out and pitched really well yesterday. And he may not and probably won't start with the big league club, but he's going to be pitching there sooner rather than later as well.
Yeah, that deal probably doesn't happen if you don't have Robinson Cano's former agent over there. And also, it's just always a good idea in baseball, even when you have those players that fit so well in your organization, like Edwin Diaz, who works harder than anyone. But if they're a top-end bullpen piece, you sell high always on that, because the return from year to year, usually there's drop-off that happens. And unfortunately for Eddie, that happened. He just got overused that year. The one-run year, it was just remarkable when he had, I don't know how many saves before the All-Star break, but Scott Service ended up getting a haircut based on it. So, you know, it was impressive. Who else is up on your schedule to speak to this week? Or even if it's not in a formal setting, who do you want to chat with and just maybe pull aside and talk for a few minutes?
We talked to Julio Rodriguez and
J-Rod.
Kind of looking at, yeah, and that was pretty fun. First of all, he's huge.
Yep.
He is an enormous player. It's striking. The height, the frame he has, he's 19 years old.
If you haven't seen it, Google Nelson Cruz and Julio Rodriguez. And that's a picture of 17-year-old Julio at the time with Nelson Cruz, and he's bigger than him.
And what is most remarkable about talking to Julio is that there is a spark in his eye and an excitement about this opportunity. And he talked to us about when he signed with the Mariners. That's something that happens when you're 16 years old in the Dominican. The fact, and he talked about it as that's really the first step toward your dream. Like, that's an amazing moment, this first step toward your dream. And you get, there is an excitement that he has about this opportunity, about the Mariners, about his friend Jared Kelenic, talking to him about playing Fortnite or going to the Cheesecake Factory together. Like, this idea that there are these two young players who are in many ways linked and have an affection, a friendship for each other. It should be noted that Kelenic was the one who first said hello, and he tried to speak Spanish to
Good.
Julio.
Awesome.
He said hola, and then Julio responded with what's up.
Yes.
To let him know. Like, there's just, and I love that part of spring training. We forget, because there's so many numbers that we crunch and look at it, win projections and PECOTA and all of the different things that we use to measure players. There is a human side to this game of there are a collection of people from vastly different backgrounds, whether it's someone from Wisconsin in Jared Kelenic.
Small town Wisconsin, by the way.
Right, or someone from the Dominican Republic in Julio Rodriguez, who share an affection for a game and a dream in that game, and they kind of come together in this very, very... A clubhouse is unlike any other environment on Earth. Like, when you get inside a professional athlete's locker room and or clubhouse, and this kind of being a spot where a lot of those dreams, it's still all hope right now. And so that makes it a really fun time. I really enjoyed getting to see Julio Rodriguez's vision of his future.
That's my favorite part of being in the clubhouse as well. It's so international. You can hear so many different languages, because even as a, like, coming from a Spanish-speaking household, and my dad's from Mexico, so Mexican Spanish, very different than Dominican Spanish or Venezuelan Spanish. And just to hear even the different accents and everything, I love being in a clubhouse for that reason. And you realize that, you know, there's more that we have in common than it sets us apart. And I think it's such a cool part about baseball. I'm really looking forward to watching this team. You've got these two, this duo, and then also the Evan White, Justin Dunn, Kyle Lewis crowd who watches The Bachelor together. So I like these little pockets of friendship that are growing in the organization.
It sounds like Evan White's kind of the chief Bachelor critic. Like, he
yes.
could be the Bachelor producer.
Right.
Which I think he and Stacey Rost will need to have a conversation at some point.
Oh, absolutely.
Is Stacey the chief expert of The Bachelor at 710 ESPN Seattle?
I would
Seattle?
Say she's the chief reality show expert in general. So, yeah, I'm going to defer to her on that. I think her, like, real one that she's invested in is Love Island, but that's, like, the original Love Island, because she'll tell you that the American version of Love Island isn't the good version. So, you know, she's got standards, and Evan White and her could just discuss that for hours, I feel like.
This is about a month ago. I was sitting at a sandwich shop because I wanted to get a roast pork with garlic. It's a hybrid
nice.
Sandwich with garlic bread and Chinese pork, char siu. And we're sitting there, and the people next to us, one of the young women talks about Vanderpump Rules.
Oh,
and
yeah.
She goes, the way I got into that was a friend who I really respected told me I should watch it. And then that's how I got into Love Island. They were talking about these shows as if they were like literature. They were allowed to access this precious piece of culture because of a recommendation from a friend they really respected.
And this
never,
is where we're at.
Never have I feared more for the future of our country than in that moment.
There's no longer book clubs, you guys. It's just reality TV show clubs.
Oh, that's what allowed me to get into Love Island. Oh, really? I thought it was turning on your TV.
I thought it was just the Bravo Network, okay?
Yeah.
Danny, thank you so much, my friend. Look forward to talking to you soon. And Julio coming up on the show today?
We are going to talk to Julio. Justice Sheffield. We've also got an eye out from Alex Smith, who has given us a very solid maybe, which I think is a sign that he's about to blow us off. Kyle Lewis, perhaps. We're going to stay frosty, as they say.
Oh, I love it, Danny. Stay young out there. I'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good.
Danny O'Neill, live from Peoria this morning, 7 a.m. to 10 a.m., Danny and Gallant. Also, coming up on The Blitz, Pete Carroll sitting down with John Clayton. We've got more from that conversation. And Scott Service, the Skip, sitting down with Danny and Gallant. It's next on The Blitz, right here on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The Blitz from the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Welcome back to The Blitz at 6. Lydia Cruz alongside with you Thursday, February 27th. Danny and Gallant live from spring training all this week. Bob, Dave, and Moore going to be down there pretty soon, too, in the next couple of weeks, broadcasting live in the sunshine. I'm so jealous getting their tan on. But in the meantime, we also get to hear from players and coaches in exclusive conversations. This week, Danny and Gallant sitting down with the Skip, Scott Service, yesterday to chat about his approach going into spring training this season.
What's the biggest adjustment to having all these young players up here? Because it's definitely a different, I imagine, style of managing when, you know, back a couple of seasons ago, you have a lot of pros that have been there for a while, and now you got a bunch of guys who are trying to figure it out.
It's actually really fun. I've enjoyed this camp, and coming into camp, we knew it was going to be different in a good way, and the fact that it was really going to be a priority for us, our coaching staff, the people around our team to simplify. How simple can we make things, and how clear can we be in our messaging and what's important to us, and sitting down with players and explaining to them kind of their player plans and giving them direction on how to get better. Oftentimes with veteran players, you assume they know how to get ready for the day, to prepare before games, to get their workouts in after games, all those things that go along with being a big leaguer. They've done it for a while. So this camp has been fun. I think we came in with the right mindset on what we were going to do with them. I think it's gone very well so far. Like I said, we've got a couple games under our belt now. Yesterday's game was fun. We're going to play a lot of those games. They'd be lower scoring, really good defense. We did a nice job pitching yesterday, and you know it worked out for us.
We are talking to Scott Service here with us. It was a 2-1 game. Justice Sheffield pitched 2 innings. I'm really intrigued by him.
He's looked great so far. He's ready to take the next step. Last year at this time, coming to us and then the big trade for James Paxton going over to the Yankees and then Sheff coming our way. Anytime you come to a new ball club, you don't really know people. How do I fit in? Who am I going to hang with away from the park? And going through what he went through last year, having to go all the way back to AA, kind of getting back on track with his command of his pitches. He's always had good stuff. It was about getting it over the plate. But now he looked great yesterday. I was really happy with how he went about it. He fell behind the count on a couple guys, but he righted the ship. He got back into the count, and then he's got wipeout stuff and ended a couple at-bats with really good sliders he got for strikeouts.
A lot of young pitchers, and this is a difficult time of year, I imagine, for a starting pitcher, whether it's Justin Dunn or it's Yusei Kikuchi. What advice have you been giving these guys as they try to figure themselves out the first couple of starts, especially in spring training, when basically they're only getting a couple of innings out there, and it seems like they're really just working on their craft as opposed to trying to throw their best stuff out there?
Well, this is the best time of the year to be a starting pitcher, if you think about it. spring training is about the pitching and getting them ready and getting them built up. But our guys, they've got specific things that they are working on. They're taking them out. They're starting to get in their normal rotation now once every 5 days and getting their work in there. But I think we've had the player plan meetings have been really a big thing for us this spring. And sitting down and taking all of the analytics, showing the guys, here's where you're really good, How can we get the best version of yourself to come out more consistently? That's what it's about to be a good big leaguer. And getting those guys to understand that clearly it's been a fun process. Now it's fun to see if they can take it and put it in play on the field. Some things will happen very quickly for some guys. Other guys, it's going to take a little bit longer. But that's why we're here. We're here to give young players opportunity, and we've got them in our everyday position players. We've got young guys in our rotation. We got young guys in our bullpen. They're all going to get a chance.
How will you measure success this year? And I say that you guys have been very honest and open, which is great for fans and for people covering the team. But this is going to be there are no shortcuts, and you said that. How do you measure success this season?
Yeah, we really do need to be disciplined, and discipline is the shortcut. It allows us to get where we want to go a little bit quicker if we can stay disciplined to the path. And when I talk about that is giving young players opportunity, continuing to coach them up, helping them along the way, knowing that there's going to be some rough stretches. How are we going to measure ourselves? Are we consistently getting better? Are we sticking to our process here, not getting so caught up in the result and chasing that win every night? Believe me, when the game starts, I want to win the game as much as anybody. Our players are focused on winning. But along the way, are we getting better? Our players understanding our process, our coaches getting the messaging through to them. And some, like I said, sometimes it clicks right away for guys. Other guys, it just takes time. And that's where the discipline really comes in. Keep driving the message. Stay with the plan. Because you don't know when the player's going to get it and take off and run with it. That's the fun thing of coaching and knowing that it eventually is going to make a difference, you know, for the player and for the team. And that's what we're shooting for here. We have a chance to be really good for a long time with this group of players, and especially what's coming, the wave behind this group is really exciting as well.
What have your first impressions of Jared Kelnick and Julio Rodriguez been?
They're good. It hasn't been they're young. It's that they're really good. That's what stood out for me. We've seen both of these guys in the early games. Kelnick's been swinging the bat really, really well. His timing is really good. Julio will be in the starting lineup today. But they're good players. They're good people. They're asking great questions. They fit in they're very, very comfortable in our clubhouse. And that's the nice thing about having so many young players. It isn't like they're 19, 20 years old and they're jumping into a clubhouse full of mid-30 guys. You know, they're in a group that they can hang out with away from the field. It's just a tight-knit group of young players that all have similar goals. They want to get established in the big leagues. But ultimately, they all want to win, and they want to be part of something really big here.
That was Scott Servais on with Danny and Gallant. Plenty more interviews coming up, 7 a.m. this morning, starting then. Up next on The Blitz, though, it's time for the Hot List, the latest from the NFL Combine. Workouts get underway today. Tight ends, quarterbacks, wide receivers. What's the schedule on that? Pete Carroll sitting down with John Clayton yesterday. And the latest on the CBA negotiations, why Richard Sherman and Aaron Rodgers voted no. It's next, right here on 710 ESPN Seattle.
From the Alaska Airlines studio, this is The Blitz. It's time for The Hot List.
Holy mackerel!
The headlines for the day in sports every morning at 6:45.
Heck yes!
What are we missing here?
A full breakdown of the top stories of today on your morning drive.
Let's go!
Local legend Danny Kelly, formerly of Field Goals, currently writes for The Ringer and does an incredible job joining 710 yesterday to talk about all the research and the hard work he's done on the NFL draft this season and the Seahawks specifically, having spent a lot of time covering them and watching them. But Danny Kelly talking about Jadeveon Clowney and saying that he, in his mind, the Seahawks probably can't pay the price.
I wouldn't say no matter what, because ultimately they can't tie up so much of their cap in, you know, like two or three players. Obviously, Russell Wilson and Bobby Wagner are getting a lot of money, and I don't know if they need to be so desperate that they have to sign him, but at the same time, you know, if they don't sign him, they're going to have to do some work, because they really don't have anyone else right now after that. And so, you know, if they don't sign him, maybe they sign two or three other guys at cheaper deals, but they definitely need to do something at that position. But I would say I'm not in the camp where they have to sign him or get desperate at that position. I think it's one of those things where it'd be nice if they get it done, but it's not the end of the world if they can't.
Danny Kelly also on the Seahawks. He thinks they'll do enough in free agency when it comes to pass rushers so that they won't end up reaching in the draft.
You know, there's obviously some guys in free agency that are that are going to be interesting for to them. I think obviously Clowney is the number one option for them in free agency. You know, if Everson, a guy like Everson Griffin wants to come to Seattle, that could be definitely interesting. You know, Robert Quinn is another guy I think that people are sort of connecting to the Seahawks. That's interesting. Jason Pierre-Paul, Shaquille Barrett, who played with the Buccaneers last year, had a very good year. Bud Dupree. So there's a lot of guys, and the nice part is that Seahawks have had success with both, you know, 3-4 outside linebacker types and, you know, traditional 4-3 defensive end types. And so I think, you know, they'll probably do what they typically do, which is try to sign a guy or two in free agency and give them the flexibility to go into the draft without having to reach on a guy or, you know, basically they're not going to paint themselves into a corner.
Danny Kelly of The Ringer, though, if they are looking for a pass rusher in the draft, he has his eye on one particular person.
If they do end up going the draft route, there are some guys in the first two rounds that could certainly be, you know, interesting to them. You know, a guy that I've connected to them recently is Zach Bond from Wisconsin, who would fill, I think, kind of two roles for the Seahawks that they're going to need going forward. You know, off-ball linebacker with Michael Kendricks hitting free agency. You don't really know if the status of him going forward. And then K.J. Wright going into the last season in his contract. And so Zach Bond is a guy that can play off the ball the first two downs, like run downs or whatever, and then he can line up in nickel situations and rush the passer. He was a really good pass rusher for Wisconsin this season. So he's a guy that I think is pretty interesting. And then
Also, Terrell Lewis, mentioned by Danny Kelly from Alabama, is another potential possible pass rusher overall. But it's not too deep, he said, in the top half of the draft at that position. Where it is deep is in the wide receiver group. But also, we heard from John Schneider earlier this week because of the status of Rashad Penny, not being sure when he might be back. Chris Carson also working back from an injury. And CJ Procise, an unrestricted free agent. Running back could be an area where they are looking to address some depth. Danny Kelly on running back possibilities in this draft for the Hawks.
A guy like, you know, Zach Moss from Utah, he falls into the late second or third round. That's when I feel like it's okay to pull the trigger on a guy like that. I mean, he's, to me, I actually comped him to Marshawn Lynch because he's just made of cement when he runs. He just, guys just bounce off of him. And so he's really, really, I think he fits exactly their identity and things like that. But I mean, if you're going to have to reach up into the early second or even the first round for a guy like that, I think you definitely, you get more value going at a different position. So for me, I would definitely not spend a high round draft pick on a running back this season, even though there are some very good running backs coming out. I think there's some really interesting guys in the later rounds. I like the guy, DJ Dallas from Miami, actually Travis Homer's former teammate. He seems like a Seahawks type guy to me, but, you know, good tackle breaker, very tough. Everybody in Miami, like the fans, the teammates, everybody loves that guy. So he's a guy that I'm interested in. And Eno Benjamin from Arizona, he actually kind of reminds me a little bit of Travis Homer. You know, just elusive guy, a little bit undersized, but, you know, hard runner.
Watched a little bit of Eno Benjamin last week or last year. I like that. Danny Kelly, his full interview available online, 710sports.com. Lots of in-depth draft analysis there. Former TCU and Seattle Seahawks quarterback Trevon Boykin sentenced to 3 years in prison after pleading guilty on Wednesday to charges stemming from a 2018 assault of his girlfriend. Boykin and prosecutors agreed to the sentence in return for his guilty plea Wednesday to aggravated assault and witness tampering charges. Shabrika Braley alleged that Boykin broke her jaw in two places in the March 2018 beating. The Seahawks cut Boykin in the wake of that allegation. And now Boykin, his attorney, saying he'll be eligible for parole in less than a year with this deal. He had been sitting already in Tarrant County Jail in Fort Worth since December because he tried to duck paying for a hotel room in nearby Arlington. With the Seahawks, Boykin played in 5 games in 2016 and spent 2017 on the Seahawks practice squad. But it wasn't the first time that he had been involved in an issue with the law. In 2015, while still in college, it was actually 2 days before TCU was scheduled to play the Oregon Ducks in the Alamo Bowl on January 2nd. He was involved in a barroom brawl and suspended for the game, pleaded no contest to a count of resisting arrest, and got a year's deferred adjudication probation. And then in 2017, arrested on charges of public intoxication and misdemeanor marijuana possession. After a car he was in, he was a passenger and struck a tavern and hit 7 people on the sidewalk. Marco Gonzalez chatting with Danny and Gallant this week. I loved hearing from Marco and his leadership role. It talked about how the contract extension gave him more confidence that he could be a leader in the clubhouse. And he said, it's kind of fun right now with all the youth in the organization. It makes things a little more competitive.
It feels more competitive. We certainly have more energy, more drive. I mean, it's tough to even get a workout in the weight room because it's packed, and which is a beautiful thing. I hate it some days, but it's beautiful because we got guys working. So there's differences, and I think the only thing we're lacking is experience. We need to get out on the field. We need to play together. We need to learn together, and we need to fail. We need to go through some trials to see how this thing is going to come together.
Talked about his message to the young guys like Jared Kelnick and Julio Rodriguez, and that's when your time comes, because it will come, be ready to go right away. Marco also with his thoughts on the Astros sign-stealing scandal.
Not shocking that any of this news is coming out, and they're not the only team that's been doing it. It's a problem in all of baseball. I would say that the majority of our meetings before games were how to cover up our signs. How are we going to switch between sign set to sign set? And what are we going to do tonight? What are we going to do in the third inning? And then they limit the mound visits on us, so we have trouble sometimes communicating that. Just things that you don't want to have to deal with as a pitcher.
Right.
It makes pitching that much more complicated and difficult than it already is. I just want to go compete. I don't want to have to worry about someone taking my sign. Like, what is that? That's not baseball to me.
A couple of spring training games under their belts, and the Astros, I believe, have seven Astros have been hit by a pitch, but a lot of them not on that 2017 tour or involved in that. If you follow along at Asterisk Tour online, it's the 2020 Astros Shame Tour. They're keeping track of all of them. Alex Bregman, the latest to be hit. A lot of boos in the crowd, but basically hit by a cement mixer and took first base in that one. Aaron Rodgers, one of the 14 dissenters among the 32 NFL player representatives, which voted against sending the new collective bargaining agreement to the full NFL Players Association membership. Of the 14 dissenters, there were 17 that approved and then one who abstained. But Rodgers explained that he was voting not just for himself, but based on what his locker room wanted him to do. His Green Bay teammates, who elected them as their representative, and he explained that on Twitter yesterday. He wrote that there was just too many concerns in his locker room to approve this. He said, 17 games to me was never something to be negotiated. The owners made it clear that the 17th game is about paying for the added benefits and had nothing to do with the positive feedback received about any extra risks involved with the added regular season game. There were also so many issues raised about the workplace, the workload, and the off-season program. Some have been addressed while others have not. Shortly after Aaron posted his response, Richard Sherman also explaining his no vote on Twitter. He said, quote, health and wellness of our men is always the most important aspect. There is no price you can put on that, and that is why I voted no. I respect the men that have been part of this discussion and stood up for their locker rooms. Also, Marquise Pouncey talking in a video, I believe on his social media, talking to other players on the team, saying veterans need to stand up and take care of the younger guys, the guys who aren't making as much money in this time.
Our vote, no. Our NFLPA, the dudes at the top, the leaders, man, that all that. They ain't looking out for the best of the players. And if y'all want my vote, the Pouncey Twins vote no. And if any player on any one of our teams, if y'all heard for rent money or anything while we go through this lockout, call us. Man, we got way more money than what they had back in the days. We ain't got to worry about that. All the vets on each team, stand the f*** up. Stand up. Show these guys that we care about them. Man, I care about all you young players, and I love you guys to death. I ain't going to let y'all down.
Meanwhile, the NFL Combine underway in Indianapolis, and today on-field workouts begin starting at 1 p.m. Pacific time. Those are 4 to 11 p.m. Eastern time. Tight ends, QBs, and wide receivers, that'll be on NFL Network, but they start the workoffs today. Tomorrow will be special teamers, place kickers, O-linemen, and running backs, and then over the weekend is the defense. D-line and linebackers on Saturday, defensive backs on Sunday. Rich Eisen, which is what all of us are tuned into, running the 40 on Sunday as well. Pete Carroll sat down with John Clayton this week out there and talked about trying to add to their team because they knew they were really close to getting all the way to the Super Bowl last year.
You know, the big questions everybody's asked about JD and asked about Jay Reid and you know, what's going to happen there and the acquisition of Greg Olsen is something that's special for us. And so there's a lot happening. I mean, I don't know if I can zero in on what's going to take place there. But what we're trying to do is we're trying to add to this team. We know we were really close last year with a chance to be a championship club. And it's exciting to know that we're that close with a couple spots, and we have some room that we can work with in the cap. Some. Not a lot, but some. That'll go fast. But all of that, you know, leads us to opportunity now. So the draft is a big-time opportunity to help our club.
Draft, obviously, a focal point. He also said a half dozen pass rushes that they're interested in potential free agent pickups, but pass rush, definitely a focal point in all that they're doing. Pete Carroll saying it's keeping John Schneider up at night as they move forward here. Also had some thoughts on using so much base defense and said it was really a lot based on personnel and putting their best players out on the field. The fact that Michael Kendricks is just a special elite talent player. So could that change potentially this year? Pete says we'll have to wait and see. The Mariners improved to 2-2 in Cactus League action with a 5-3 win over the Reds yesterday. Justin Dunn with his first debut, his spring performance of 2020. He allowed one run in two frames and was particularly dominant in the first frame when he fanned Joey Votto, among others. Tim Lopes also continuing his hot start to the spring, doubled twice yesterday. He's now 5-for-5 with four doubles in two games this spring.
Offensively, Tim Lopes is, I think, leading leading the world in doubles right now. So he's continues to stay hot. Did some nice things on the bases today, too. Aggressive guys that typically don't. Wisdom took off, got a great jump. So staying aggressive, made the plays defensively. Again, pitching and defense, the key today. But fun game. I like to see all these young guys we've got. We've got really talented arms. Once they keep it in the strike zone, chance for good things to happen. So good ball game again today.
Vogey getting him on the board with an RBI single. Lopes had an RBI double. Patrick Wisdom, one of the newest Mariners, also with an RBI single. And Dylan Moore adding on in a particularly lethal sixth inning. Also, Jose Siri extending the Mariners' lead to 5-2 in the seventh on his first home run of the spring. But the focus a lot on the pitching, and Justin Dunn allowing just the one run on two hits and one walk while striking out two in those two innings. And Justin Dunn said it felt like a little bit of redemption after making his MLB debut against the Reds and struggling.
Yeah, a little redemption for myself. I had this one. I was excited when I saw I had this lineup come out and kind of show them who I really was because they didn't really get a chance to see it in Seattle. So it's good for me to build off of it and really attack those guys.
What did he work on this offseason?
Just staying behind the baseball. I mean, we were talking last year. My ball was kind of spinning on a sideways axis. So trying to really backspin the ball like I did coming out of college in my first couple of years in pro ball and getting back to having the ride and the carry and really driving the ball through the catcher's chest.
He's saying his offseason work, he's seeing it pay dividends now, which is fun to watch. That's a wrap for the Hot List and the entire Blitz at 6 Hour. Danny and Gallant coming your way next, live from Peoria, right here on 710 ESPN Seattle.